come to order. It is 3:18 Wednesday, March 11th, 2020, in Barnes Room 124. Members present are Representatives Hannon, Gillis, Story, Fields, and myself, Chair Sponholz. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Take a moment to silence your cell phones if you haven't already done so. Before we begin, I want to thank Sophia Tenney, the House Labor and Commerce Secretary from Records, and Nate Williams from the Juneau LAO for staffing the committee today. We're going to cover three bills: House Bill 301 on apprenticeships by Representative Ledoux, House Bill 94 on vaping products excise tax by our own Sarah Hannon, and the Senate Bill 52 on Title IV reform by Senator Peter Michicki. We previously brought forward and adopted a CS version 8 for House Bill 301. Oh, we're going to take a brief at ease while we wait for the sponsor of the bill we're going to hear to come into the room. A little bit here, and we're going to move over to House Bill 94, the vaping products excise tax. Representative Hannon and Tim Clark, staff to Representative Hannon, you want to come forward, put yourself on the record, and introduce the legislation?
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. I'm Representative Sarah Hannon. I represent House District 33. This is the first hearing of House Bill 94. House Bill 94 would add electronic smoking products to our list of tobacco products currently subject to a state tax of 75% of the wholesale price. Use of e-cigarettes, commonly known as vaping, is booming in the United States, particularly among young people. Between 2017 and 2018, the Center for Disease Control's National Youth Tobacco Survey saw a 78% increase in the use of e-cigarettes by high school students, from just below 12% to nearly 21%. Nationwide, 80% of high school students do not perceive a great risk of using e-cigarettes. Almost all e-cigarettes contain some amount of additive nicotine, and no credible evidence has been found that they are safer than cigarettes. Tobacco taxes are a proven way to reduce youth tobacco use, resulting in fewer kids becoming lifelong smokers and thus ultimately reducing health care costs. It's our expectation HB 94's tax on e-cigarettes will have that same effect. These taxes also bring in revenue. HB 94 is projected to raise $2.5 million a year once it is fully implemented. Given the state's fiscal challenges, we should welcome an increase of this revenue. For those of you who have not looked through the statutes and read them for fun, you might note that the Alaska statutes are completely negligent of mentioning of e-cigarettes. The last time tobacco taxes were addressed in Alaska statutes was a dozen years ago. And e-cigarettes, although they did exist, were pretty unknown. And we have not addressed them in our statutes at all. So this would simply add them into our current taxation structure as a category of taxation under our nicotine taxes.
All right. Do you want to run through abuse sectional?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Representative Hannon. Section 1 of the bill amends 4350150C so that the state can enter into agreements with municipalities that also tax electronic smoking products. Such agreements would be to jointly audit a person or that is a business responsible for paying the excise tax the bill addresses. Essentially, this is an enforcement tool both the state and local governments can use to their mutual benefit. Section 2 amends 4350300 to include electronic smoking products among the other tobacco products already taxed by the state at a rate of 75% of the wholesale price. This section also describes what types of transactions make a business liable for the tax. Section 3 amends 4350310B to describe exemptions from the excise tax for electronic smoking products. These include electronic smoking products that are subject to taxation under 4361010 through 4361010, I'm sorry, 030, and this relates mainly to marijuana-related products that are already taxed in a different area of statute. But, exemptions also include electronic smoking products that don't contain nicotine or electronic smoking products approved for sale by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration as a drug or product used to treat tobacco dependence. And finally, there's an exemption if the U.S. Constitution or other federal laws prohibit the state from taxing the product. Section 4 amends 435.03.20A to require a person who engages in business as a distributor of electronic smoking products subject to the tax to be licensed by the state.
Mr. Clark, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Going back up to Section 3, there's an exemption if the U.S. Constitution or federal law prohibits the state from taxing the product. Is there such an exemption right now, or such a prohibition right now?
Not that I know of. I would have to
get back
to you on that. It may, well, I hesitate to conjecture, but it may relate to agreements with, say, sovereign federally recognized tribes who might be selling products on independently,
right.
But I'd rather not speculate. I'll get back to you on that.
All right, thank you.
Where was I? I think Section 5 amends existing licensed distributor reporting requirements to include sales reporting of electronic smoking products. Section 6 adds electronic smoking products to provisions in 435.03.35, which addresses procedures for receiving refunds or credits for taxes paid on products that have become unfit for sale, are destroyed, or are returned to the manufacturer. Section 7 amends 435.0.340, record-keeping requirements for licensed businesses selling tobacco products to include businesses selling electronic smoking products. Such records include tracking sales and product information on the products being sold. Sections 8 and 9 perform a manner of housekeeping in that they update the definitions of distributor and wholesale price under this chapter to include electronic smoking products as among products related to them. And Section 7 adds to AS 435.0.390 to provide a definition of electronic smoking product consistent with use of the phrase elsewhere in statute. It specifies that an electronic smoking product means a component, solution, vapor product, or other related product that is manufactured.
This conference may be recorded. Joining conference. This conference is in micro mode.
We're going to go at
this conference may be recorded.
All right. This meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee will come back to order. I want to welcome Vice Chair Suits and apologize for the delay. We had some media difficulties, and if you could proceed, continue on with the sectional analysis, Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, for the record, this is Tim Clark, staff to Representative Hannon. I believe we've reached Section 10, which provides a definition of electronic smoking product consistent with the use of the phrase elsewhere in statute. It specifies that electronic smoking product means a component, solution, vapor product, or other related product that is manufactured and sold for use in an electronic electronic cigar, electronic cigarillo, electronic pipe, or other similar device for the purpose of delivering nicotine or other substances to the person inhaling, and B, a product under A of this paragraph that is sold as a part of a disposable integrated unit containing a power source and delivery system or as a kit containing a refillable electronic smoking system and power source. Section 11 specifies dates of applicability of various sections of the bill in order to preempt any confusion about when these measures become effective. And finally, Section 12 provides an effective date of January 1st, 2021 for the Act.
Representative Fields.
Through the chair, with respect to Section 3 and exemptions for electronic smoking products that don't contain nicotine, is that a consistent exemption across other states that tax vaping products? And are there other similarly addictive substances that tobacco companies use in lieu of nicotine for vaping products?
Madam Chair, Representative Fields, forgive me, you are referring specifically to the second bullet about the nicotine contents. From what I've seen in other states, there are exemptions when the vapor products are nicotine-free. However, Madam Chair, Representative Fields, that's not the case in all jurisdictions, I believe.
Follow?
I guess my follow-up question, maybe for the rest of us, is that a necessary exemption, and are we kind of creating a loophole where it's going to be relatively easy to sell another vaping device that has similar dangers but just has another addictive product?
Yeah. Yep. All right. That's a good question. Anybody else? Representative Story? No? All right. Thank you very much for introducing the bill today. We're going to go ahead and set this aside for now. We'll take it up at a later committee meeting. Thank you very much. All right. Next up, we are going to go back up the calendar to House Bill 301 on apprenticeship by Representative Ledoux. Welcome,
thank
Representative
you very much.
Ledoux.
Thanks for hearing the bill again. My name is Gabrielle Ledoux. I represent Muldoon and the Elmendorf portion of J-Bear and House Bill 301. As I explained the other day, or rather on Monday when you first heard the bill, is all about writing the current apprenticeship regulations into statute. Very simple.
All right. Are there any questions for Representative Ledoux? All right. I guess not. We're going to go right then into testimony. Oh, Representative Fields.
Thanks, Zach Fields, House District 20. I appreciate the opportunity to work on this bill with Representative Ledoux, and just wanted to make it clear, as I think committee members are aware, that our purpose in putting forward this legislation is to make sure that there isn't a workaround in the trainee language, and that means not having a workaround, whether it's labeled student, intern, trainee, learner. The intent of this bill is to be very clear that apprenticeship is the standard we're using for these trainees, as has been practiced in industry in Alaska for decades, and just wanted to put that on the record. And I would certainly not support any attempt by the department to create workarounds around apprenticeship, whatever term they would use for trainee, whether it's intern or something else. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And with that, we're going to proceed forward with public testimony then. Did you have a question? Vice Chair Suits?
I do.
All right.
Thank you. I see that we have this letter from the Alaska State Home Building Association.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me in what capacity that this bill affects the Alaska Home State Building Association.
Thanks through the chair, Representative Suits. I think there may be some confusion about the bill because, as written, the bill changes nothing in terms of how any industry practices in Alaska today. I think the home builders have a separate bill which would change some standards for plumbing, and basically they're objecting to this bill because they would rather go in a different statutory direction. But the fact is, this bill changes nothing about the way industry operates today.
All right, thank you. With that, we're going to move forward to public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify? All right, come on forward.
Chair.
All right. Identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
My name is Victor Banizak. I'm actually the president of the state, Alaska State Home Building Association, and I am here to testify on HB 301.
All right.
So good afternoon, Chair Sponholz and the members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Victor Banizak. I'm president of the Alaska State Home Building Association, and I'm also a residential contractor here in Juneau for going on 18 years now. Yesterday we submitted written testimony, and I would ask the committee members and the public to refer to that. Today I would like to verbally summarize our written testimony and make myself available for questions. The Alaska State Home Building Association appreciates the opportunity to comment on HB 301 relating to certificates of fitness for plumbers and electricians. We also support apprenticeships. We support fewer statutory barriers for training skilled trades. We have long supported state funding for programs in workforce development. Getting good qualified workers and trades for our line of work is already very difficult. It's become a national crisis. We are here to ask you not to make it more difficult. Residential construction contractors do not want and do not need to be included in AS 18.62 for certificates of fitness. We are already well covered and don't wish to be included in legislation that tightens controls on apprenticeships and other possible avenues to skilled trades. We would propose that HB 301 be amended to remove residential construction from certificates of fitness. Residential construction is licensed separately under AS 08.18.025, and we also comply with municipal residential building codes, which include inspections. Mortgage financing requirements also typically include code compliance and energy efficiency standards. In other words, residential construction has plenty of government and regulatory oversight and construction standards that are outside the requirements for certificates of fitness. Conversely, the state law exempts certificates of fitness for residential construction performed by owner builders, and it even prescribes how owner builders can list and sell new construction that includes self-installed plumbing and electrical. Anyone who says that certificates of fitness should be mandated for licensed, bonded, and insured home builders is welcome to explain why unlicensed contractors in this state are exempt and allowed to install their own plumbing and electrical. We feel that HB 301 strengthens federally registered apprenticeship programs, but it does not necessarily strengthen housing. If enacted, HB 301 should remove residential construction from certificates of fitness for plumbers and electricians. Thank you for your consideration.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Banishek? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. Mr. Banizak, currently you are a licensed and bonded commercial home builder, and are you required under current law to use certificate of fitness electricians and plumbers?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we are required to use licensed, administrated electricians and plumbers. They have to have their own. If we don't, we can get inspected by not only the city but the state inspector, and they will come through and ask, what is the entity doing your plumbing and electrical? And if we don't say somebody that's got an administrator's license that's licensed and bonded fully, then they can shut our projects down.
Follow up.
So separate from the inspections, because that this bill doesn't change anything about inspections, but you are required to currently use electricians and plumbers who have certificates of fitness.
Through the chair.
Even if they're a subcontractor to you.
Correct.
You have a question, Representative Stutz?
I have a follow-up to Representative Hannon's question. Mm-hmm. So your ask is not to be required to use employees or subcontractors that have this certification of fitness. Is that right? You don't want to continue doing what you're currently required to do.
Through the chair, Representative Stutz. So our biggest issue right now is that there's a severe workforce deficit. That's the number one bottleneck in our entire industry. And so it's the desire to, while we respect this body of government wanting to keep what's built and building standards up to the highest standard, we just would hate to see that avenues for high school students and college age and just new builders we would hate to see that bottleneck down to where there's only a very small amount of ways that they can get to where they're going.
I'm sorry, Mr. Banaslek, are you suggesting that high school students should build residential housing in Alaska?
I'm suggesting that there are programs for them to begin learning and start working towards. The high school program, they build homes and they actually sell them as a learning. It takes a long time, but there are programs for the high school age and college age through UAS to build these homes. Of course, they have to be inspected. Everything has to be brought up to code. They have to have, I'm not exactly sure the specific requirements, but they're involved in that. And so we would, I would hate to regulate so much that kids coming up mm-hmm. through those areas would not have avenues that if they chose not to join a union or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Streets.
Thank you. So let me simplify this. Sometimes I'm pretty simple-minded. What you're hoping is to be exempt what you are currently required to do, yes or no?
That is correct.
Thank you.
All right, are there any additional questions for Mr. Banaslek? All right, thank you very much for your testimony today. Is there anybody else in the room that'd like to testify? All right, seeing none, we're gonna go on, oh, Brad, did you wanna testify? Okay, all right, I'm sorry. Brad, you're on the line. Mr. Austin?
Yes, it's Brad Austin. I'm the training coordinator for the Plumbers and Pipefitters Local 262 here in Juneau, Alaska. Thanks for this opportunity to testify today. I'd like to let you know that we support House Bill 301. I think when you tie the plumbing trainee certificate of fitness to an apprenticeship, you have guarantees of properly trained apprentices that will turn out to journeymen that will eventually be installing, you know, the potable water, the drinking water systems in your homes and buildings. The barriers to get into a program like ours are pretty simple. You must be 18, have a high school diploma or GED, a valid Alaska driver's license, and be able to have a level 4 in graphic literacy, level 5 in applied mathematics, and level 4 in workplace documents through the Work Keys assessment test. Our program is actually a 10,000-hour program. The state, the minimum requirements for the state are 8,000 hours, but our program is 5 years long, 10,000 hours. In the years that I've been involved with it since 1999, we have turned out 45 apprentices that have become journeymen, many of them still living in southeast Alaska or around the state, and we're pretty proud that every one of them was able to pass their state plumbing test the first time. I'd just like to say I think this is a great move to tie the trainee certificate of fitness to an apprenticeship program. It's a very proven way to train, and I think we turn out superior skilled tradesmen. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Austin? All right, seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today. Also on the line, we have Ryan McGovern from Fairbanks. Mr. McGovern?
Hi there.
There we go, we got you. Go ahead, identify yourself and testify. Proceed with testimony.
Yes, hello there. Ryan McGovern with Local 375, Plumbers and Pipefitters in Fairbanks, Alaska. Just wanted to participate today and let you know a little bit about why I think this bill is a good idea. Excuse me. Essentially, I just believe that relaxing these standards will ultimately jeopardize the quality of our craftsmen and the safety of the public, potentially, and essentially that's all. Excuse me, everybody, I wasn't prepared to testify, just participation.
That's all right, Mr. McGovern. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I thought you were interested in testifying. All right.
Not exactly, but more than willing to comment if needed. And
thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. McGovern? All right. Moving on to Peter Jerzak. Yep.
How you doing? Hey, I'm Peter Jerzak. I'm a resident of Sitka, Alaska. I'm a licensed plumber in the state and state of Alaska. I'm currently a project manager for Ketchikan Mechanical in Ketchikan and overseeing a project in Sitka, Alaska. And I would just like to comment that I'm strongly in favor of House Bill 301. And my background is I was a state inspector for 29 years with the Department of Labor. So I was a plumbing inspector and a boiler pressure vessel inspector. And when I first started in 1988, it was kind of a, you know, hard to explain, but a lot of the contractors and journeymen didn't know what code we were even on in the state of Alaska. And we didn't have continuing education requirements and so forth. And when the state adopted requirements for apprenticeship program to be part of the certificate of fitness requirements for trainees, the workmanship improved greatly. It brought continuity into the program, and I saw the workmanship from the tradespeople, both plumbers and electricians, improve greatly. And we also have a continuing education requirements for journeymen and plumbers. We have 16 hours of continuing education every 2 years to renew their licenses. That's also the same for electricians. Another thing I'd like to comment on is the technology in these trades are changing rapidly. And just keep up with this type of these technological changes. The journeymen and apprentices both need to keep abreast of that. An apprenticeship program really gives them a solid basis to continue on with their careers. And these are careers. They're good paying jobs, and I think it's something that the state of Alaska should support and encourage. And it's going to give these guys a career that they could go anywhere in the country and work. And it allows for reciprocity. If we have a downturn in the economy, these guys could go to work in Seattle or Portland or somewhere else on the West Coast, and licensed plumbers from those states could come here if they've gone through an apprenticeship program. We're on a uniform plumbing code in the state of Alaska, and we have been since going back to the 70s, and that code also covers residential construction. It's very important that we have trained people working on these residential projects. And it would be a real step backwards. It would turn the clock back 30, 40 years if we took this requirement away from residential construction, and the consumers would suffer greatly. So I strongly encourage this bill and the regulations that go along with it. I've seen both sides. I've seen it's a rare thing that an owner builder can actually plumb and wire a house and have it meet the code requirements. We need trained people out there doing this work. So I'd like to just comment, I'm currently overseeing a project on the Sheldon Jackson College campus. It's a historical building, and I'm overseeing plumbers, sprinkler fitters, and sheet metal people. All of these tradespersons were trained through an apprenticeship program. And I'm truly impressed with the productivity of this project, how it's going along for the contractor out of Ketchikan. It's just amazing for me to see the workmanship on that job from these guys. And I would strongly support this apprenticeship requirement. I served an apprenticeship starting 1973 in Massachusetts, and I came to Alaska in 1980. And I've been so lucky that I was able to have a career in this trade. So I want to thank the committee for allowing me to testify.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for your testimony today, Mr. Jerzak. Representative Hannon has a question for you.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Jerzak, you perhaps have a unique perspective, having spent 29 years as a state inspector. And I'm curious as to whether, you know, the concern we have heard articulated at various hearings in similar issues is about having enough skilled tradesmen available, tradespersons available. As an inspector, can you give any insight as to how we make sure that we have the skilled tradespeople available for both the commercial and the residential industry with still adhering to both the statutory and inspection standards that Alaska's had?
Well, I think it's the vocational education and the high schools are trying to steer students in that direction. I think there was a long period of time where the trades weren't equal to getting a college education, but now I think people are realizing that they can get paid while they're learning through an apprenticeship program, and I think it's just a matter of educating high school people and getting them in trade classes. I mean, I was intended to go to college when I was in high school, and I just happened to take a shop class, and I was just amazed at how much I was learning in there, and I enjoyed it, and I applied to get into an apprenticeship program, and I was accepted. I think it's just kind of a program that needs to be encouraged out there. There's plenty of people that want to go to work and get good jobs, and it's just really we're having a hard time getting apprentices to even apply for. It's not that there's a roadblock out there. It's just getting people educated and encourage them to get into their trades. It's a great career if we can just get that mindset. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody else? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Next up, we've got Tom Fisher in Fairbanks.
Yes. Hello. Hello, Madam Chair. Thank you. My name is Tom Fisher. I'm the president and owner of Aaron Plumbing Heating Company in Fairbanks, Alaska, Union Mechanical Contractor, incorporated in 1982. I'm a four-year member in good standing of Local 375 Plumbers and Pipe Fitters and served my apprenticeship here in Fairbanks. I'm also a mechanical engineer. My degree was obtained through UAF. I also serve as the management chair for the JETC apprenticeship program for Local 375, as well as a committee member of the City of Fairbanks Code Review Commission. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 301 and give the committee a mechanical contractor's viewpoint. From a contractor's perspective, House Bill 301, the codification of this legislation, is not only instrumental, but it's essential ensuring that we have the most properly trained, prepared workforce for the plumbing and electrical trades. A properly trained workforce that will minimize the probability of endangering the public health and property, as well as themselves or others. Registered apprenticeship programs not only provide on-the-job training and mentoring, they provide very structured standards as well as trade-specific, well-planned, and proven training programs aimed at making sure the participants are given the tools and resources to have the opportunity to be the best tradesperson they can be. Registered apprentice programs are an absolute win-win as they not only provide benefits to career seekers, but to employers like myself, not to mention the social and economic benefits realized by the communities they serve. Much like the previously presented proposed regulation changes from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, we don't need any more ideas or to have any more discussions about ways to lower the quality of the workforce in these trades within our state. I think that I recall that the public outcry was enormous in opposition to those proposed changes, and I hope we don't have to revisit that fiasco. We need a way to find ways to get people who want to have meaningful careers, not to be confused with a job, into these registered apprenticeship programs. Any benefit that would be realized by relaxing the current requirements would manifest into a myriad of other problems that would surely have to be dealt with, and the outfall would be tremendous. As a contractor, I pay benefits into a fund to support the apprenticeship program that I draw my labor pool from. These participants are committed to a five-year program with actual classroom time in a learning facility, equipped with the latest technology, in front of professional, well-trained instructors, staff, and a very well thought out and structured training program, a college for the tradespeople, if you will. I could not imagine a scenario where I would enter into a contract with a client to provide the systems that I do with the type of work that I do by kicking the streets and putting up flyers to find anyone looking for a job to fill our labor needs, skilled labor needs. I support the codification of this legislation, House Bill 301. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Fisher? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today. Next up, we have Vince Beltrami.
Hello. Chair Sponholz, members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, thanks for the opportunity to offer a public comment. For the record, I'm Vince Beltrami, president of the Alaska AFL-CIO, representing over 50 unions and 50,000 workers in the state of Alaska. And I'm speaking in full support of HB 301 today. My prior job was as the statewide training director at the NECA IBW apprenticeship program back in 2003. And that was actually the year when the current regulations were modified after many years of contemplation to require all certificate of fitness holding trainees to be registered in front of the registered apprenticeship program. And the numbers of trainees and apprentices grew quickly during that time. And the new requirements, not only did it not stifle training opportunities for Alaskans, opportunities increased significantly. It actually resulted in the Associated Builders and Contractors and others, union and non-union, to begin expanding apprenticeship programs that they had previously been more or less exempted from. This helped greatly expand apprenticeship in these trades. It eliminated race to the bottom wages for trainees. It ensured more safety on the job for workers and a safer building for occupants of buildings to inhabit. And regardless of governor or commissioner, those standards have remained intact for the past 17 years. And it's been a tremendous success story. However, recent efforts by the Department of Labor's previously proposed regulations threatened to undo that gold standard. So to prevent this from being toyed with by current and future administrations, I applaud the effort to codify this current regulation into law. And I would like to align myself with the comments that were made on Monday in your invited testimony by Deborah Kelly and Dave McCallan. And I don't need to repeat their testimony, which was spot on. I've read the only opposition letter that I've seen in the file from the home builders, and all I can deduce is they're arguing for exemptions to safe work practices that ensure the safety of workers and users of these installations. Rules that are currently required to follow now. In fact, it's clear that their concern, as stated in their letter of opposition, is more with building codes as they're advocating for adoption of HB 76 in their letter. And that would shift from our point of view from a more stringent set of code requirements to a more lenient set of residential building codes. And that desire really has nothing to do with the bill that we're talking about today. And the gentleman from the homeowners suggested workarounds such as homeowner builds, which don't require licensed electricians. And to me, that's kind of wrong-headed thinking. What he's proposing is basically to diminish the existing standards that they've been required to work under since at least 2003. So the bottom line is that HB 301 will enshrine into statute what has existed in regulation for the past 17 years and which has resulted in growth and expansion in delivering top-notch skilled tradesmen and women for building Alaska's future. And I encourage you to move HB 301 from committee. And again, thanks for the opportunity to testify.
All right. Thanks for your testimony today, Mr. Beltrami. Are there any questions? All right, no question for you. Thank you very much. I'm going to close public testimony now. We didn't receive any amendments on this legislation. Are there any other points of discussion anybody on the committee would like to make before we consider action? Representative Fields.
Chair Sponholz, I just wanted to thank you for hearing the bill. For those who might be watching, I think it's become abundantly clear that this bill simply maintains the status quo, which is an apprenticeship system that works. We heard under the previous regulations from 375 Alaska construction workers and contractors who oppose watering down existing regulations and who support the status quo. So I think it's really positive to see this committee and literally dozens of members who are co-sponsors of this bill be responsive to both the industry and workers. It's also worth noting that this bill supports an ecosystem that goes from the high schools to colleges, includes training centers so that Alaskans can get good careers in the building trades. You know, as a local example, King Tech High School in Anchorage, where there are school to apprenticeship programs for plumbers, pipe fitters, and electrical workers. And by providing regulatory certainty for the industry, we also make sure that students at King Tech, and I know at Hot Chup and Fairbanks, have these opportunities and don't have those opportunities taken away by shattering what has been a longstanding industry consensus. So thanks again for considering this bill.
Are there any other comments? All right. I would entertain a motion.
I would be happy to do that, Chair Sponholz. I move committee substitute for House Bill 301, Work Order 31-LS1506/E from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? All right, seeing none, the bill moves from committee. We're going to take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. The record with Senator, we're back on the record with Senator Michicki. Please approach. And who's going to walk us through the sectional? Is that going to be Mr. Jackson? All right, come on up. Yeah. I think we want to get, so just for the committee's comfort, we're going to let the bill sponsor get through the sectional analysis, and then we'll ask questions at the end, if that's all right, just to make sure that we get through it. I think we have a couple of people also that would like to testify, so I want to try to get to those people. This committee runs to 5:15, just as a reminder for everybody, so we've got about an hour and 4 minutes to get through this. All right, gentlemen, put yourselves on the record, and let's get this party started.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Sponholz.
Hang on one moment. I apologize. We have to end at 5:05 today. I apologize. There was a meeting that came up this afternoon. My apologies. There we go. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. Senator Peter Michicki, prime sponsor of Senate Bill 52.
And for the record, Chair Sponholz, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Michicki. And Chair Sponholz, good afternoon, members of the committee. The bill before you, Senate Bill 52, as you've noticed, is a long bill with a long sectional. And it is a culmination of over 13,000 hours of work from volunteers, staff, many, many people. But the issue we have today of the sectional, I just want to remind members that much of the bill is reordering and reorganization of existing statutes. We're not changing anything. And if you notice in your sectional, it's color-coded. Those sections are in yellow. So we haven't touched those sections. The next sections that we, the actual sections that we have made changes to are highlighted in green. You'll see changes there. And then you'll see some pink, magenta sections. Those are the penalties, either new or old penalties, but we've just highlighted those so that we bring those to your attention. So with that, Chair Sponholz, I will get started.
Please do.
Okay, in section one, on pages 1 and 2 of the bill, you'll see a declaration of policy, purpose, and finding. And then we add a new section in 0406005. Section 2, that you'll find on page 2, adds new authority to the director and adds a new subsection to AS 0406075. Again, as I noted, the next three sections are existing language. Section 6 is powers and duties, and amends AS 0406090 to add a new subsection directing the board to prepare Title IV education plan for public safety, industry, youth, municipalities, and the public with an annual revision. In addition to that, we add new subsections G through J, which is directing the board to review the fees for licenses and permits every 5 years. We allow opinions of the legislature amending this title, requires the board to provide notice of violations to licensees after receiving them from the court, and to post FASB information online. That section can be found on page 3. Section 7 is again reordered. Subsection 8 deals with a statewide database, and this adds new subsection 04-06-095-C, and that directs the board to produce a report of aggregate regional sales of alcohol in local option areas. This was discussed yesterday, on Monday in the presentation. In section 9, again reordered, no new changes there. Then we get into a new chapter 9 dealing with licenses, endorsements, and permits. In section 10, we're adding the new chapter 9 to Title 4, some of that is relocated and renumbered, reorganized to bring all of those licenses into the same section. You'll find those sections on page 5 through page 51. The various license types, the first one is in 0409010, and that's just a new section defining the licenses, the three tiers, the limits, limiting license types to those listed in the chapter. If we skip down to AS 0409050, authorized sales, we are requiring large manufacturers to go through a wholesale distributor. That gets back to the three-tier system. Then in 0409060, we do note that there are penalties that have been relocated to that section. In 0409080, again, we have definition of unauthorized manufacturer sale as violations, and 0409050, and setting the penalties for those violations. The following 0409090 is definitions, just for more clarity there. Then we get into Article 3, which is wholesale licenses. We have a small section of that that is added that will reduce the annual transaction fees for smaller businesses. That can be found on page 8 and 9 of the bill. The following section, 0409110, reduces the annual transaction fees again for small businesses, and we're dealing with limited wholesale brewed beverage and wine licenses. We then have three sections that are, as I mentioned, simply reordered. Then we get into 09150 and 160, which are penalty sections, and those deal with failure to pay the annual fee or file an affidavit. From there, we get into the retail licenses in Article 4, again, a small section with penalties. Turning to the next page of the sectional, you'll see a small penalty section in 0409210. The rest of that section is simply reordered. If we go down, the next two sections are the same small section, just noting the penalties for the committee's review. The following section, 0409240, adds a new section and relocates 0411220, and we're going to adding a designation for alternating premises. That can be found on page 16 and 17 of the bill. And we get into 0409250, which is a theater license. This is just relocating the license which was in regulation, and we are codifying that license. It also, as you notice, details the penalty for a violation. Again, the following sections just have a number of penalties highlighted for your review. We skip down to the bottom of that page to 0409310. We create a new license type, the brewery retail license. And we, in, if you turn, get to the third line of that that piece of the sectional, it does specify that we're extending the brewery closing times to 10 p.m., allowing limited presentations, classes, and fundraising events on the premises. And we also, as noted there, have penalties for failure to comply. The following section does the same thing with winery retail license. The next section, 0409330, does the same with the distillery retail license. The next section, 0409340, has a small penalty section noted for the committee. 0409350 is a seasonal restaurant or eating place license. This is a new license type. We also have language in that section dealing with the penalties. The next section, 0409360, creates a new license type, which is winery direct shipment. Again, we have language in there with the penalties. This license would allow direct-to-consumer online sales of wine for in-state, from an in-state or out-of-state winery. The next section, we maintain the, we noticed the penalty section. We're maintaining the misdemeanor Class A penalty for unlicensed retail sales. Under Article 5 for endorsements, 0409 is just defining the types of endorsements. 0409410 deals with the manufacturer sampling endorsements. This is a new endorsement that would allow on-site sampling. This is actually relocated from existing language, and we do note the penalty section. 0409420 is a multiple fixed counter endorsement. This is a new endorsement.
Multiple fixed
and,
counter.
Is relocated from section 0411090. And we note. The following section, 0409430, is a new endorsement. This is a hotel or motel endorsement. It uses some language that's been relocated from 0411090, setting the fees and noting the penalties for violations of that noncompliance with that endorsement. We have the same language following that in 440 for a large resort endorsement, in 450 for a restaurant endorsement, in 460 for package store shipping endorsement, and 470, which is a package store delivery endorsement, 480, a package store repackaging endorsement, 490, package store sampling endorsement, 500 is the bowling alley endorsement, the golf course endorsement in 510, the brewery repackaging endorsement in 520, and as you see there.
Could you move a little slower, please?
Yeah. Too fast for you?
All right.
We'll slow down.
Yes, ma'am. I apologize for speeding up with no questions. I assume we want to move through this expedition.
We would like to understand properly.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
I apologize. And Madam Chair, would you prefer that I go back up the page any, or are we all right?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Then we get into Article 6, the various permits, and in 0409600, we're defining the types of permits and establishing the application process for those permits. The following four sections are again reorganized. We get down to 0409645, which is a music festival permit. This is a new permit and allows a restaurant or eating place to serve beer or wine at a festival held off the holder's licensed premises. And there are some restrictions. We're requiring a festival that must have taken place in an unorganized or must take place in an unorganized borough, may not exceed 4 days, and the festival must have taken place at the same location for the last 10 years. Chicken stock.
Yeah, yes. That's what I was wondering. Thank you.
I suppose I could have just said chicken stock and we could have moved on. But
in
0409650, this deals with a nonprofit organization event permit. This has expanded the number of permits from 5 per year to 10. Then if we move down to 0409670, we have a new permit That is a package store tasting event permit, allowing that package store to host an actual tasting at the package store licensed premises with service from its own inventory, setting the time limits, the food requirement, and limits those permits to 6 per year. That new permit can be found on page 49 and 50. Then when we get down to 0409685, we get into the live music and entertainment permit. This is new language, a new permit, allowing holders of brewery retail licenses, a winery retail license, or distillery retail license to hold up to 4 live event permits or live events per year on premises between the hours of 9 a.m. and 10 p.m. on a single day. A new concept, and you'll find that on page 50 of the bill. If we move over to 0409700, we're setting penalties for failure to comply with permit requirements.
Mm-hmm. All right, before we move on to Article 7, we've covered quite a few chunks here, and I just want to take a break for questions. Since we asked actually people to hold questions, I want to make sure we stop along the way. Representative Fields.
Thanks, through the chair. Getting back to the theaters, and I hope I'm referencing the right section. So my understanding is that under this bill, the Performing Arts Center in Anchorage will be able to continue to sell alcohol as it has historically.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, that's absolutely correct. In section 0409250, we are taking the license, the theater license, from 3AAC 304695 and codifying that.
Thank you.
Stutes?
On page 1, let's see. On Article 2, mm-hmm. You skipped over 020, 030, and 040. And it says it adds new retail license and endorsement on 040, same thing on 030.
The same thing
use
on
your microphone, please.
Oh, sorry. And the same thing on 020. Moves provisions from current brewery license to new retail license and endorsement. Can you explain that to me, please?
Mm-hmm. Chair Sponholz. Mm-hmm. Could we fit 3 up here? Because instead of moving back and forth to Ms. Brawley, I think it would be more
efficient.
You
might have to share microphones, it looks like. Let's take a brief Eddie's while you get situated. Microphone. You want to introduce yourself and address the question?
Sure. For the record, my name is Anna Brawley with Agnubeck Consulting, supporting this project. Through the chair, Representative Stutes. So those 3 licenses that you referenced, the brewery retail, winery retail, and distillery retail, would take the retail privileges that exist today in the brewery, winery, and distillery statutes and split them into a separate license. So, for example, an existing brewery that has a brewery license now would be issued, if they choose to pursue both of those licenses, would be issued the production license or the manufacturing license and the retail license, but they would be separate pieces.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. I've lost which section my question is, but it is the term multiple fixed counters, and your note is it's on page 33, 34.
It's in section 5, Article 5.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And just
help me visualize. AS0409420.
420.
I had the same question.
Describe. I turn to those pages. They're very lengthy, so help me visualize what we mean by multiple fixed counters. I know what a contractor means by that, but I don't know what a...
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, so this is an example of something that the concept does exist in Title IV today, but it's being renamed and essentially created as an endorsement. So some beverage dispensary licenses or bars that have multiple rooms. So a beverage dispensary license is defined as one room with a fixed counter with plumbing, by which they provide service. So currently they can pursue a duplicate license, which is essentially just a second version of their license. They pay the full $2,500 fee for each of those duplicate licenses, but they cannot be transferred independently. So instead of having a duplicate license, the proposal is to use the endorsement system and create an endorsement that essentially does the same thing.
Follow? Clarify. So currently, I've got a business in mind. The brewing company in Skagway has a BDL license with a full-service bar on the ground floor, and then upstairs there's a restaurant. So right now, they probably have one BDL, but a second endorsement serving on two floors because they're not all in one room. So this would mean this is what they're now called. They still have one BDL and then endorsements for however many separate floors or rooms they're serving alcohol in. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I don't know specifically that business, but my guess is that would be correct. Another example in Anchorage is Chilkoot Charlie's that has multiple rooms. Thinking.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yes. So Chair Sponholz, part of the everybody got something, but no one got everything. This is a common sense change to the current practice of requiring a different license in different rooms. It just didn't make sense. And this was something that was brought by the industry for a little bit of common sense for places like Chilkoot. I mean, it's one establishment.
Right. Okay. Representative Stutz.
Thank you. Through the chair, on page four, about halfway down the page, 270. Is the 8-year sunset a new sunset on that, or has it always been 8 years for this sporting event and sporting activity and event license?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, the 8-year sunset is not something that exists in statute now. The current license with those same privileges is called a recreational site license. So essentially the bill recommends renaming that to sporting event or activity license to better reflect what the existing statute says. And then the 8-year sunset is proposed for any businesses that do not meet that existing statutory definition to be able to change their business model, pursue a different license, or provide a rationale for how they meet the statutory definition.
Thank you. And I have one follow-up. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Down at the bottom on 310, where it extends brewery closing times to 10 p.m., is that a hard closing, or is that I lock the doors and let people finish their drink, or everybody's out by 10 o'clock?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, my understanding is that the current law is unclear on that point, and so breweries, for example, will stop serving at 8, but will continue to be open. That issue is not addressed in that particular section, but in AS 04-16-010, hours of sale, essentially, there is a new section that has been inserted to basically clarify the issue that you're bringing up, that they would need to have a hard close.
Okay.
Could you give me that section number again?
Yes, it's AS 04-16-010, and I don't have the section number in the bill, but it will
come. That's okay. I can find it. Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Senator Michiki?
So to clarify, Representative Steeves through the chair, is it went from a soft 8 p.m. to a hard 10 p.m. closing?
Thank you.
That's a great descriptor. Representative Story?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I see that there's many penalty or the penalty line, and I'm just wondering, have there been any significant changes in penalties in this bill in amounts, or have things changed significantly?
I'm happy to take that. So when we went through the presentation the other day, the only penalties that really changed essentially were to make them more effective on the lower end. We didn't change any of the more serious penalties. And then there are penalties associated with some of the new license types, and that would be a better one for Anna to cover.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Story. Essentially, now almost everything in Title IV is a Class A misdemeanor. There's one section that says unless it's otherwise defined, it's a misdemeanor. So the penalties that are defined here generally are making it clear for each section what the actual penalty is. For licenses, generally the approach proposed is to make non-compliance with your license, so for example, serving after hours or not posting signage properly would be a violation, a minor offense, with a penalty of $250, versus selling without a license, which would remain a Class A misdemeanor. And so most of the penalties that are being described is simply to make it clear what the penalty for that specific section is.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
All right, Representative Fields.
Thanks, Chair Sponholz. More of a comment than a question. First of all, I support the bill and just wanted to know in the 8 to 10 p.m. closing, you know, there are issues that we hear about from kind of political professionals, and then there are issues that your friends and family text you about when they get frustrated. And the number one issue my friends and family text me about is, why are these breweries closing at 8 p.m.? It makes no sense to the public, and I just really applaud the sponsor and the stakeholders for having a more common sense standard so that my friends can patronize the establishments they want to support and not be texting me late at night when they're turned away. Thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions? All right. Representative Story.
Yes. I see on section 6 on page 1, there has to directs the board to prepare their Title IV education plans for public safety. And could you educate me a little bit about what that looks like? And I'm seeing in the new subsection, it adds information about fetal alcohol. Is that what fetal alcohol syndrome?
Spectrum disorder.
Spectrum disorder. As it adds that information online, has that information not been there before?
Through the chair, Representative Story. So there's two different pieces to that. First, in regard to the education plan, the intent that the stakeholders have brought forward is not to duplicate efforts that are happening now. So, for example, Health and Social Services does a great deal of education and prevention work, mm-hmm. As do other nonprofits and entities around the state. The idea is to coordinate better with the ABC board than what is happening now, and to ensure that the ABC board and AMCO, who are the subject matter experts on Title IV and our alcohol laws, can coordinate and provide education on those matters to the public, to licensees, to local governments, to everybody that uses Title IV. And regarding the FASD question or fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, that is related to something that the that AMCO provides now. My understanding is that the actual document was produced by DHSS, but it just provides information for women who are pregnant or may be pregnant about FASD and encourages them not to consume any alcohol while they're pregnant. And that is something that is required to be sent. If you order something from a package store in Alaska and they send it to you, through the written order process, they have to include that information. So it simply requires posting online, and the purpose of that is to make it available to potential winery direct shipment licensees who are out of state, you know, who don't necessarily need to be mailed a huge stack of papers, but so they can also meet the proposed requirement to send those to customers.
Thank you.
All right. Vice Chair Stutz.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. On the new permit, which would allow license holders to have live entertainment 4 times per year, mm-hmm. between 9 a.m. and 10 p.m., is there anything in this bill that regulates that? How are you going? Do they have to get a permit through the ABC board so the ABC board will know that they've had 1 or 2 or 3?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, that's correct. This would simply create a new type of permit, but it would be handled in the way that all other permits are handled, including catering permits that beverage dispensaries get.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We can get back to the sectional, and I think we were starting with Article 7. And we'll see if it's possible for us. We'll see how many questions we have. There is one person who is on the line to testify who is due to have a baby sometime soon. And so if it's possible for us to get to her today, I'd like to do that on the off chance she's not available in the future. All right.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. Again, for the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Machicki. As you said, we are on Article 7, Common Carrier Approval. You'll see that on page 51 and 52 of the bill. under 0409750. It's common carrier approval, and this requires board approval of a common carrier to transport and deliver alcoholic beverages to consumers within the state. We set requirements and penalties for common carriers. Unfortunately, we missed a little pink spot on that section.
I would like to commend you on the color coding on this sectional analysis. It's very useful. Thank you very much.
Chair Sponholz, I've found it very helpful as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I would think that staff and other committees are not going to find it helpful when we now demand that they do it for all of our sectionals.
I think we will all appreciate the use of color coding moving forward. You've started a trend, Mr. Jackson. All right.
All right. We are down to, it looks like, Chapter 11 under licensing. Section 11, again, we are noting the penalty section, again, maintaining that Class A misdemeanor penalty. We've got a couple of sections that are reordered. Then we get down to Section 14, which we're noting on the next five sections, 14 through 19, various penalties that we've set out as in for violators of those non-licensed activities. We're establishing the fines. When you get down, actually, I should touch on Section 16, which is a new subsection for board approval of transfers in AS 0411040D and E, and make it a minor offense and provide for a penalty for unauthorized transfer of an alcoholic beverage license. We also have a new Section 16, a new subsection requires the reports for limited liability organizations in 0411045C and D, and we set the penalty. The next section, 18, we're adding a new subsection requiring reports of corporations for failure to report stock transfer or change of officers or board members. In Section 19, again, a penalty section, new penalty section, requiring reports of partnerships with similar requirements and penalties. Next, we get into Section 21, another section dealing with penalties of non-resident distiller, brewery, winery, or wholesaler, and we're amending AS 0411060 to add a new subsection B, which will maintain the existing misdemeanor class A misdemeanor penalty for violating the previous section. Then we get into a new section, new language on Section 23, which is the application for a new license or permit. We're amending AS 0411260 to exempt a winery direct shipment license from the application process for other license types. And you'll find that on page 57. Also on page 57, we have another rearranged section of statute. On page 58, we get into Section 25, which is the new piece, adding the application for renewal of license or permit, and we're amending 0411270 to exempt winery direct shipment license from the renewal process, and we're instead defining 0409360.
And
we get down to Section 27, we add a provision for automatic transfer of the REPL or seasonal REPL license if the board takes no action in 90 days. The next two sections, while they are not highlighted, they should be. We have criminal justice information and records. We're amending 0411295A to clarify the issuance and renewal of a conditional contractor's permit as it pertains to criminal justice information records, and we're amending 11295C1, adding a reference to the conditional contractor's permit in the definition of applicant. On the next page of the sectional, you'll see Section 30, and that is a new section, a new subsection dealing with notice of application in AS 0411310C to exempt a winery direct shipment license from notice requirement that does not pertain to this license type. That's on page 59. Section 31 is a false statement of application section, a new section 0411315, and we're relocating 0416210, and we're defining the crime of making false statements on an application and just noting that as perjury. And that is a Class C felony. We have a number of reorganized sections until we get down to section 37, which is new, dealing with the denial of license or permit, and we are adding new section 0411330E to exempt a winery direct shipment license from certain provisions in the denial of an application section. Mm-hmm. We have a number of old sections until you get over to section 45 on page 11 of the sectional, where we are adding a new subsection 0411395 to allow the board to delegate authority to the director to impose conditions or restrictions on any permit other than the conditional contractor's permit. Section 47, another new section, was a population limits. This was referenced on Monday. This amends 0411400A. And we edit that section referencing the new population limits of 1 in 12,000 for new manufacturer retail licenses. And we add license exempts, adds a license exemption from population limits. Section 48 deals with population limits in 0411400I. And we list the licenses exempt from the population limits, including manufacturer, just production only licenses, and wholesale licenses. Section 49 is population limits, amending 0411400K, and allows for a relocation of a package store, lowers the borough threshold population for qualifying boroughs, restricts the number of licenses eligible for transfer to those exceeding the population limits. That, again, is a concept that was covered on Monday. Mm-hmm. Section 50 deals with petition for additional restaurant or eating place licenses for certain local governing bodies. We're adding a new section 0411405, giving first-class cities, home rule cities, and unified municipalities the ability to petition the board for additional restaurant or eating place licenses to be allocated to their jurisdictions. If we move down to section 55, the next section with new language, we're amending AS0411430 to allow licenses to be issued to a government entity or tribal organizations, place residency requirements on corporations and limited liability organizations. And we're, that's really mostly it. Section 56, we're prohibiting the financial interest by amending 0411450B and removing restrictions on manufacturers owning a retail license. We move down to section 58, which you'll find on page 76 and 77 of the bill, prohibited financial interest. We're adding that new subsection to 0411450G and H to restrict manufacturers above a certain annual production level from owning a wholesale license or retail license, and then defines the thresholds for production by product type. The next section, section 59, prior public approval. Amends 0411460 to exempt winery direct shipment license boundary restrictions. If you turn a couple of pages back in the sectional, members, you'll find the next new section is highlighted in green towards the bottom of page 14 of the sectional. All the rest of that, again, is reordered and reorganized. If we skip down to chapter 16, section 81 of the bill on page 86 and 87, we're talking about the hours of sale and presence on licensed premises. This gets back to Representative Stute's questions about hours of operation, hard close, and we are requiring a person not to be on the licensed premises outside of the allowed operating hours unless to conduct business with a licensee, provide maintenance or improvements. And this is referencing mm-hmm. new subsection E in 0116010.
We'll get to questions in the end of this session.
Okay.
Keep going.
Then section 82 is the hours of sale and operation. Again, we're adding new subsection E and F to clarify the hours a person cannot be on the licensed premises outside of the hours of 10 p.m. to 9 a.m., and that deals with the brewery, winery, distillery, retail establishment. Mm-hmm. Again, unless to conduct business, maintenance, that type of thing. We also add some penalty to that section. Can we skip down to page section 84, rather? And we're amending the penalty section in pricing and marketing of alcoholic beverages in 04-16-015 by adding a new subsection E, which would set the penalty for violating this section as a violation. Okay. Section 85 is trade practices section, adding new section 04-16-017 to specify illegal practices by manufacturers as defined by federal law, and directs the board to adopt regulations defining exceptions to these rules, and then we defined administrative penalties for violations. Section 86 is a an amendment to the solicitation of alcoholic beverages penalty for purchase on behalf of another, and it is set at a $100 fine for unauthorized solicitation or purchase of alcoholic beverages. Section 86 is new language and new section, dealing with online sale and purchase of alcoholic beverages in 04-16-022, prohibiting online purchase and sale to Alaska consumers unless the licensee has a winery direct shipment license or package store shipping endorsement, and we're also setting penalties in that section. The next two sections have penalty language in them, and in section 88, we're amending the illegal presence on premises involving alcoholic beverages penalty. And in section 89, we are addressing the penalties for conduct relating to drunken persons on the premises, and we're amending 04-16-030. From there, Chair Sponholz, we move to section 91 for possession of ingredients for homebrew in certain areas. We're adding a new subsection to 04-16-035 B and C to clarify the current penalty for possession of those homebrew products. Section 92 deals with penalties for access of a drunken person to a licensed premises. Section 29 deals with the penalty of the obligation to enforce restrictions on licensed premises. Section 94 deals with access of persons with restriction to purchasing alcohol, and we're amending 04-16-047 to reference the existing penalty for entering and remaining on licensed premises. We move down to section 99. We've got a number of penalty sections here listed. The first being furnishing or delivery of alcoholic beverages to persons under 21. We repeal and reenact 04-16-051D to define the existing offense for furnishing or delivering alcohol to a minor. Mm-hmm. Section 100 again deals with furnishing or delivering alcoholic beverages to a person under 21, and we add a new subsection to 04-16-051E to relocate the existing Class C felony penalty for that. In section 101, again furnishing alcohol to a person under 21 by a licensee, we amend 04-16-052 to change the penalties for furnishing or delivering alcohol to a minor by a licensee or employee. And we're adding administrative penalties to the licensee if an employee is convicted of a violation of this section, and shifting the misdemeanor penalty in 04-16-150 to the licensee who knowingly allows employees to violate that section. 102, room rental. We're dealing with penalties for room rental for purposes of consuming alcoholic beverages, amending 04-16-055. And we maintain that current Class A misdemeanor penalty. We also deal with permitting a minor to illegally possess liquor in a dwelling, and we add a $500 fine to that penalty. On the next page, you will see section 105, which is on page 95 and 96 of the bill, and we deal with penalties for purchase by or delivery to persons under the age of 21, and we are adding penalties for violating that section. Take a deep breath.
No, we don't have time for pauses.
Section 107, consumption at school events. We're amending 04-16-080 by adding two new subsections B and C to define the penalty. The section 108 should actually be pink as well, and we just clarify the definition of consideration in relating to bottle clubs. Section 109, we're prohibiting the bottle clubs. Section 110 is a sale of certain alcoholic beverages being prohibited, and we're just defining the sale of those prohibited alcoholic beverages. Again, Section 11, more penalties, reduce or reintroduction of alcoholic beverages, or removal of reintroduction. We're amending 04-16-120 to define the removal or introduction of alcoholic beverages, and we're setting penalties and exemptions. The next section with penalties in section 112 through 114, we're just maintaining the existing penalty for unauthorized transportation. Section 115.
Chair Sponholz,
mm-hmm.
We would like the person that may be out for a very joyous reason to testify as well. Should we take a break there for that purpose and come back to this?
That's a good suggestion, Senator Michicki. Let's take a pause here on the sectional. We should pick the sectional back up on Friday.
We have two pages left.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're going to get there because we've got to be done by 5:05. I appreciate your sensitivity on the topic as well. So we're going to hold this part aside, and then I'm going to move over to, she's an invited testimony. Ms. Hall, are you on the line? Tiffany Hall?
Hi there, yes.
Ah, there we go.
On the line, can you hear me?
Yes. All right, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you so much, Chair Sponholz and members of the committee. My name is Tiffany Hall. I'm the Executive Director of Recover Alaska. We are an organization that works to reduce excessive alcohol use and harms across the state. And I am due tomorrow, so thank you so much for letting me testify today. We have been working on the content of SB 52 for many years now, hand-in-hand with other public health and safety proponents, as well as with members of the alcohol industry at every level. We are not an abstinence-only or prohibitionist organization. We recognize the importance of economic growth, but that being said, we also know that Alaska struggles with many problems associated with alcohol. Alcohol costs our state $2.4 billion every year in lost productivity, health care, public safety, and early death. We are dying at rates nearly three times higher than the national average. So the primary points that I would like to highlight fall in the categories of safety and health. SB 52 will limit youth access to alcohol, will promote responsible alcohol use, and will reduce the harms of overconsumption. We especially support the establishment of regulation of internet sales of alcohol, statewide keg registration, the mandated training for every single person serving alcohol to the public, the increased license fees, which will allow adequate funding for AMCO to provide more education and do compliance checks, which haven't been done in over 3 years now, the change to penalties that will hold not only bartenders but also license holders responsible, and the part of the bill that closes current loophole on population limits. These are the top issues for Recover Alaska, but the entire bill works to create a more easily understandable Title IV, which reduces the burden on both license holders and the state and makes it easier to follow and easier to enforce. The past few years, we have seen the bill hung up on differences of opinion, largely between char and manufacturers, or kind of the bars and breweries that we've all been hearing about. And I just want to really commend those groups for the hard work that they have put in over the past year to find compromise, and we fully support the solutions that they have found. This bill is full of compromises. If I had to write one myself, it would look a little bit different, just like a bill written by the alcohol industry or municipalities would look different. But I encourage the committee to remember that everyone loses a little, everyone wins a little, and overall the state wins quite a bit. I know that there are other issues that have come up regarding alcohol, and I just want to also encourage interested parties to take them up in other bills. So far that's been mostly happening, and we're really happy about that. This has been an 8-year process started by the ABC board, and everyone in the Title IV stakeholder group has dedicated very significant amounts of time to this process, as well as the bill sponsor. And we all agree that we need to get this bill passed this year. We know that there are remaining issues out there around alcohol, and we agree that those should be taken up in separate bills, but it's really critical for the sake of our business owners, our license holders, as well as our state's health and safety that we pass this bill this year. Thank you so, so much for your time, and I appreciate your attention.
All right. Are there any questions for Ms. Hall? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Hall, you said that the ABC board has not been able to do inspections for 3 years. Have you, with your program and agency, been raising that point in question? It's not actually part of Title IV, but would be, I would guess, or I'm speculating, it's a budgetary issue. Could you comment or expand further as your concerns? I assume that there would be concerns if we're issuing licenses and endorsements but not checking to make sure people are complying and therefore penalties aren't being done unless a local municipality is doing it.
Through the chair, I'll answer to the best of my knowledge, but there may also be someone who knows more about this than me. It's my understanding that the federal funding that we used to receive to do underage compliance checks ran out, and since then those basically have not been happening, and you're right that we would very much like for those to be happening. We know that they have good outcomes when they're done for tobacco. That's a program that has continued, and we would really like for compliance checks to be happening across the state, and it's my understanding that right now they are not being done.
Thank you.
That certainly is a large public health concern. Are there any other questions for Ms. Hall? All right. Seeing there's no additional questions for you, Ms. Hall, I just want to share with you what I'm sure are the entire committee's best wishes for you and your impending new addition to this world. We're all very excited for you. All right. So I'd like to take this moment then and ask, we covered quite a few pages of the sectional. Are there any questions on the part of the committee? Representative Stutes.
Thank you. I have a couple questions, and I can ask them now or later, but interestingly enough, through the chair.
Mm-hmm. And let's be mindful of the time.
I will. Is there any provision in this bill for enforcement?
I can try to answer that. Representative, through the chair, Representative Stutes. There are pages and pages of enforcement requirements in this bill, as well as the fiscal note funds the ability to enforce, which was one of the primary issues that brought the group together. Not only is our groups like Recover Alaska and parent groups concerned, as well as public safety, but the industry itself is concerned. Because the vast majority of the industry is very well operated and self-regulating, but there are folks out there that do not operate as honorably as others, and it's time to get back to a normal patrol, if you will, of making sure those poor operators are accounted for through enforcement. So I can provide a document that will outline all of the different penalty and enforcement pieces in a separate piece, if you'd like. That would be helpful.
And that would be very helpful.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. So we're going to take a break for today. We'll call it for the day so we can make some just some closing remarks, give everybody a heads up on what's coming up. Thank you very much, Senator and Mr. Jackson and Ms. Browley. We appreciate your time and attention, especially the color coding, Mr. Jackson. So on Friday, we will continue the sectional on this bill. There's just a couple of pages left, but I want to make sure everybody understands what's in this bill. We will also consider House Bill 91 on naturopaths by Representative Johnson. We'll be looking to the will of the committee in considering amendments. For that amendment deadline is close of business on Thursday, so that's 5 p.m. on Thursday. We're going to take up House Bill 27 on flame retardant chemicals by Representative Garen Tarr. We'll hear public testimony on that bill and set it aside for future consideration. We'll also take up House Bill 146 on auto dealers by Representative Klayman. We'll be holding just the introductory hearing on this legislation, and then we will finish the sectional and more invited testimony on Senate Bill 52. The time is 5:03 p.m. in this hearing of the House Labor and Commerce Committee is adjourned.